I want you to tell me some more things about yourself. What kind of a guy is Kenny Rogers?
Hmm. That's an interesting question. It's not Nashville. They shouldn't be asking that kind of question. I don't know. I think basically I'm very optimistic. I think I try to help other people in this business. That's I think is one of my big thrills. It's like about 6 years ago, and interestingly enough, at the time it was done unselfishly, and now it's to my advantage to mention it, which is interesting. I think that about 6 years ago I found a group in Linden, Texas, and I took the group to Los Angeles and produced an album on them, and three of the guys became part of Linda Ronstadt's band. The steel guitar player went with Steven Stills, but the drummer is Don Henley with the Eagles. And so
you never could keep a group together, could you?
I tell you, I did everything I could. I even offered to pay him at the last time there. I said, look, okay, if that's what it's going to take to hold you together. But I don't know. But about me personally, I think the most important factor, I think, is that basically I'm as a rule, I'm very happy, and that I'm up and I'm optimistic. And
are you moody at all?
I don't think so. I think I'm relatively consistent. I don't experience a great deal of highs, and consequently, I don't experience a great deal of lows. I try to keep in a certain area in there. When I start really getting high, I start then backing off a little bit and saying, wait a minute, you know, this. So I think I probably miss something in life by not doing that. But at the same time, it tempers the lows when you're a little more realistic about things.
All right. Now, you lost me in the translation a little bit there. When you get high, you miss something in life because of that?
No, I think that when you don't experience the real highs in life,
okay,
that when you have a tendency to cut the top of the mountain off, let's say, that you miss something, because that's okay, a very important thing. But at the same time, you lose the bottom end of the depressions. I don't have those either.
Okay.
So I think I'd rather stay in that little gray area in there I would give up the extreme highs to not have the extreme lows. Does that make any sense to you at all?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you have a temper?
No, not really.
Would that get in your way?
Not unless you smoked cigars.
Okay.
No, I really do not. I don't get
mad at people.
No, very seldom. You know why? I think the key is that I usually say what's on my mind at the time. And I think people who have temper are people who usually don't express themselves either very well or consistently. But I'm the kind of person that if you did something that I didn't like, I would say, Ralph, you know, and I would say it as diplomatically as I could, but I would let you know right away.
You would cough while I smoked my cigar.
I would try again to be diplomatic about it.
But you would get your point across.
Yeah, I think that that's the only way a person can know and consequently either alter their ways or say, hey, I'm sorry, but that's me, and either you take me or leave me, and then I either take them or leave them. Consequently, I have no friends.
I get the impression you're a gambler.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I am a gambler.
Not just at the crap table or any place like that, but in life.
Yeah, I do. I take big risks sometimes, you know, I'm a firm believer that basically, that there's two basic categories of people. There are winners and losers, and I think you are what you think you are. If you think you're a loser, you're going to lose. I happen to think I'm a winner. I think that if I gamble, I'm going to lose sometimes, but overall, in the long run, I'm going to win. So it's worth it to me, and it's exciting to me.
Good philosophy. I like it.
I don't know. You know, it works for me.
Oh, I like it. My guest is Kenny Rogers.
Wait a minute.
What?
Your host is Kenny Rogers. You're the guest. You were the last one to show up today. My guest is Ralph Emery today.
Oh.
Now, Ralph, let me ask you something. How did you get into this business? Where did you start? When did the group break up for you?
my group, actually, it all fell apart when I was caught in the traffic out there.
I see. Can I tell you the funniest thing that ever happened to me, and it happened to me in this city?
All right.
When in 1957, I had a hit record called Crazy Feeling that no one ever remembers. It was a million-selling record on Carlton Records. I did my very first radio interview in this city and very possibly in this studio. We had a disc jockey who had never conducted an interview before in his life, and it was the first one I'd ever done. But basically, as you said, I'm Ratchet Jaw. I will talk. We came on. He had a list of questions. Could not have cared less what I answered. First thing he said to me was, well, Kenny, tell me, how long have you been in Nashville? So I said, well, I just got here. I came in last night from Houston. I'm going to be here for 2 or 3 days, and hopefully I'll get a chance to look around. He said, well, Kenny, how long do you think you'll be here? And I said, oh, well, I'll be here for 3 or 4 days, and then I get to move on to St. Louis. And he said, well, where do you go from here? Everything, it was like I was looking at his list and answering him one question. We did an hour's interview, and I swear to you, it was the funniest thing. I could not help but laugh. To this day, we finished. He said, well, thank you very much. That's been real interesting. I just lost your show for you again.
No, that's a trap you can fall into.
Oh, I know it.
I was down in Bermuda, in the Bahamas one time with John D. Loudermilk, the writer.
Yes.
And we went to pick up the sea captain, who was a friend of ours, and he got in the car with us, and you know, John's got his mind on a lot of things. And he said, "Hi, Captain, how you doing?" He said, "Oh, I'm doing all right." He said, "Well, how was the trip over?" He said, "Oh, it's bloody awful. The passengers got sick and they barfed all over the boat." John said, "Well, that's great, man." He said, "What are you going to do tonight?"
"Now let's go out and have some good times." You ask a question, then turn your head.
All right, let's do a little. What do they say in church?
Segway.
Proselyting. Oh.
Proselyting.
Yes, we're going to lift a...
Wait a minute, I've never heard that.
Yes, it's...
I come to Nashville to learn proselyting?
Yes, that's when you steal. That's when you take from
it's
over...
like mobile boogie or something.
That's when you take from over there and bring it over here.
Oh, that's called robbing Peter to pay Paul.
I don't know why, a pretty ballad by Marty Robbins, an old song from the 40s, but you have your own rendition.
Well, it's not my rendition, it's the...
Do a little
the
bit
Mills. It's like, I don't know why I love you like I do. I don't know why, but I do. That's the Mills Brothers. How old are you?
I'm 44.
Now,
how old are you?
Don't lie. Now,
I'm
come
not
on.
Lying.
Now, come on. You can tell
44.
They can't see you, so I mean, you can go ahead and just say.
How old are you?
I'm 38. And we'll be until August. Then I become 61. I'm 38 years old.
I don't believe that. 38.
Okay, 27.
You got more gray hair than I have.
Well, it's Grecian formula.
Oh,
that.
Is that what that is? Yeah. Oh, I see. Just rub that on, huh?
That's right. That's right. Wash the color right away.
Well, what did you bring age into this for?
Well, you were talking about the Mills Brothers, and you were saying that, you didn't recognize the Mills Brothers.
I remember the Mills Brothers, but I don't remember them doing
They remember song. You. They spoke very highly
of you. Glowworm.
That's right.
Things like that.
That's right. Many, many more. But they had a big record.
They speak well of me, did they?
They did. They did.
Well, see, at least somebody likes me.
Said Ralph Emery Board.
Why don't you tell them what you heard about George?
I don't know how true this is now, but it came to me through a friend of George's that said that George said he was really upset about me doing Lucille. He said, "Now, what the hell does he know? He's never been in a field in his life. What does he know about country music?"
I haven't seen George out in any fields in a long time.
He doesn't have to go anymore.
I didn't know George before he came to Nashville.
I tell you,
he was in the Marine Corps.
Was he really?
Yeah.
I met George and really liked him. I've always been a big fan of his musically, but he and I got along very well. We have one of those yearly fishing trip plans. We never go, but we plan them every year.
Well, now, I do remember that he used to sing on the streets of Beaumont, Texas, with his little guitar when he was a kid, and he had a little radio show and played in a little band when he was a kid.
Is that right?
So I don't know how in the hell he ever got any fields, got into any fields to work.
Maybe he had to walk across the field to get to play his guitar or something other. But he deserves everything that's happened to him. He's really a super guy.
Well, every singer that comes on this show is a fan of George Jones.
Well, you know why? Because I think there are singers and then there are stylists. There are people who take a song and say, "I don't care how you meant it, this is the way I feel it." And that's what I think people respect. And George is that way. He does a song the way it feels best to him.
All right, I want to ask you about Kenny Rogers now.
Okay.
You mentioned something about your Indian ancestry to me earlier.
Yeah, my grandmother was almost full-blood Indian. I think she was like three-quarters Indian. And she was Cherokee, and I was raised in Texas. She died, I think, when I was about 12 years old, but she was an incredibly strong woman. I really admired her a great deal, and she looked like every Indian you've ever seen pictures of, you know, and I thought she was beautiful in that classic structure of the Indian, because my father had the same, had basically the structure, the high cheekbones and all, but my mother was Irish and English, I think. I can trace my ancestry all the way back to my grandfather. So from there, I don't know where it goes.
Well, what tribe was your grandmother?
She was Cherokee.
Cherokee, out of Oklahoma, right?
I think that's where her family came from. She lived in Apple Springs, Texas, when I knew her.
Now, since Alex Haley's book, have you been interested in checking your lineage?
I've really been interested in it. Again, I think you get into a certain area of this country to where there were no records kept at some point along the way, because it really is difficult. And it's also, somehow it's very sad, because I think that would be an exhilarating experience to be able to go back and trace myself back to.
Or it might be a downer.
I don't know how it would be, because it would not particularly depress me to find out anything, because people are a product of their times, you know.
What is your full name?
Kenneth Ray Rogers.
Oh,
and I would appreciate it if you don't tell anyone.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
Your secret
that's
is
between
safe.
You and I.
Right.
Good.
You're from Texas.
That's right. From Houston, Texas.
Do you know where Lukenbach is?
Never heard of it.
It's there. I looked it up.
Well, I'll take your word for it. I know Waylon would not lie. A man with that many hits cannot afford to lie.
Okay. You believe in Waylon?
I believe in Waylon.
You believe in
Waylon? I believe in music.
Huh?
Yes, I do. I believe
in the Easter Bunny?
Not anymore. I found no eggs this year, and I refuse to go along with it, just because it's a trend. Now, I think that I respect what they're doing. It's not particularly my approach to life, and you know, forget, you know, categorizations, and yet you almost have to explain my point. The rebel approach, the I'm going to do what I want to do, and either you like it or you don't like it. Because mine, I was raised in a different school of music. I was raised in a very commercial approach, where you look for things that are commercial. And they just say, hey, this is me, and you either take it or leave it, you know.
In this show, I picked out two more by you in the first edition.
Mm-hmm. Fine. Okay. I'm not ashamed of those, Ralph. I mean, let's lay it out on the line.
These were big hits.
These were big hits.
But
I made well over $30, $40 off either of the two of these. What was the other song? I didn't see
that. Reuben James.
Oh, yeah. Okay. These are my favorites.
But You Know I Love You is going to come up now.
Right. This, okay. Mike Settle wrote this. Mike Settle was one of the guys in the first edition. And he is, I think he's destined to be a very big writer in this kind of big influence.
Was there any jealousy in that group?
Not really, because we were all totally different people, different approaches.
Yeah, but you
to
got
music.
The billing. It wasn't Mike Settle in the first edition. It was Kenny Rogers.
What's really even more interesting is that they didn't even want me in the group when they put the group together, because I was too old for them. I mean, these were all 6 years younger than myself. And they said, well, no, we're looking for a younger group. We were all in the New Christy Minstrels at the time. And they started talking about putting a group together. And I said, well, you know, I sure would like to get out of this group myself, you know, while we're talking about escaping here. And they said, well, no, we think you're a little old for us. And it really hurt me. I mean, I can't tell you, because at the time I was only 27, so you can imagine how it would have hurt.
Well, why did they make you the lead singer?
Well, all right, here's the story, the real scoop coming out on REP, Ralph Emery program here. We had a song, But You Know I Love You, when it came out. We had another song called Once Again She's All Alone that was very much like that Mike Settle had written. And when But You Know I Love You was a big record, it was like a top five pop record and top 10 country record. They released this other song, which sounded very much like But You Know I Love You. And that was at the same album that Ruby was on. And so then all over the country, people started playing Ruby. But the song Once Again She's All Alone was going up the charts. So the record company started thinking in terms of, that if we release Ruby as well as it's doing, it's going to kill that other record. But if we release Ruby as Kenny Rogers in the first edition, it's almost like Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons and the Four Seasons as two separate entities, and you might be able to get them both played. So when Ruby came out, it just totally overshadowed the other song, and it killed it. So then the following song was Reuben James, and we couldn't go back to just the first edition because
all
it
right,
sounded
like... All
right,
but you didn't answer my question. Why didn't they pick somebody else to be the lead guy?
They liked me.
When you finished with the first edition, was that a lull in your career?
No.
That's not what I'm trying to say. Did your career hit the skids after
and hanging around?
No.
No. What really happened was there was a period in there where I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know what I wanted to do, and professionally, I couldn't decide whether to make a total change and go with something totally unique, or try and put together something that sounded like the first edition and capitalize off that until I could find a direction or just exactly what to do.
But you didn't have any hang-ups there.
Oh, no, not at all. No, it was a step forward for me.
Getting into a blue funk, wondering what's going to happen to you.
No, not at all. I'm a very optimistic person. I always believe that good things come to people who are willing to work, and I'm definitely willing to work, and I felt it was a matter of time until good things happen. It has nothing to do with, in this case, talent. I mean, I don't think I'm a good judge of whether or not I'm talented. I have never particularly felt I had a great voice. I've always felt I had a commercial voice. But I felt that with the right piece of material, sooner or later it would happen. In the meantime, all I had to worry about was working and paying alimony.
Okay. You're getting ready to go to Arabia, I know.
Yes.
And recently the folks who listen to the show heard Barbara Mandrell describe her trip to Arabia. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been to Arabia?
No, I'm really excited. I'm a big photography buff, you know, so that was one of the reasons I wanted to go. I like to take pictures of unique places like that. And the other is, I really just enjoy the experience of going to different countries.
All right, before you go to a place like Arabia in the Middle East, which is not something you do every day, do you prepare yourself? Do you read up on the country, the customs, the language, that sort of thing? Or do you just
buy insurance and take off, you know?
Just go.
Yeah, I shouldn't say that. I do. I try to get in the mood for it. I try to have some idea of what I can expect there. And but also, I like the surprise element of really not knowing. I mean, if I knew everything I was going to run into, I could stay home and watch, you know, read National Geographic or something. But it's exciting to me.
You think, for instance, you'll like the food?
I imagine so. Yeah, I can eat pretty much anything, you know. And I, as a rule, I do. As a matter, once you've been on the road as long as I have, you can eat anything that comes you come across.
So if they bring you fried rattlesnake, it won't bother you.
No, I'll just go on a diet. It won't bother me. I promise you, I won't eat it.
When you'll go over there. In the middle of June.
Right.
This show plays in the middle of June, so I assume...
I'm over there now.
You're over there now.
Actually, I'm having a great time. Wish you were here.
You're going to go over there for Aramco, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Aramco Oil Company.
Which, now, Barbara indicated that she not only entertained Americans, but she entertained all nationalities who work for the oil company.
I would assume that's true. They have about 4,000 employees, I understand, and we do 10 shows in 10 days.
And gasoline is 12 or 13 cents a gallon.
I'll bring you back a gallon.
Wish you would.
Hey, nothing's too cheap.
Well, I know you're a big spender.
Hey, please, allow me.
Huh?
Allow me.
Are you tight?
Are you kidding? That's one of my big problems. No, I don't think so. I think that for the first time in my life, I'm frugal, that I'm aware of where my money goes. And I think that's one of the good things that happens when you take a dip in your career. And while I was still making excellent money, I was making less money than before, and I became very aware of where my money went. And I think that's
good. You throw money away?
I go in spurts. There are times when I will, you know, do things that cost extravagant amounts of money, and then the next day I'll complain because, you know, it cost me an extra 50 cents to do something here. It's a checking process with
but
me.
But you must make good money. You're a big star. Reputation. I'm, work for a big price.
$100 a week. I mean, give or take.
Don't give me that $100.
No, I must say that. Yeah. You know,
I hope I get a letter that says, "Dear Mr. Emery, I understand Mr. Rogers works for $100 a week. Could you send him over to our place?"
I hope that's from the Internal Revenue Service too, and they believe me. No, I must say that's one of the real great things about this business. It's a lucrative business when you're doing well.
We appreciate you coming by.
Well, I've enjoyed it. I've wondered why you never asked me over here. I figured once I got in the charts, one more in the charts, I'm going to drop you like a hot potato, little Ralph.
When the morning sun streaks across my room and I'm waking up from another dream of you. Yes, I'm on the road once again, it seems. All I've left behind is a chain of broken dreams. But you know I love you. Yes, I love you. Whoa, I love you. How I wish that love was all we'd need to live. What a life we'd have, 'cause I've got so much to give. And it seems so wrong, deep inside my heart, that the dollar sign could be keeping us apart. You know I love you, yes I love you. Whoa, I love you. And if only I could find my way back to times when the problems of this life had not yet crossed our minds. All the answers could be found in children's nursery rhymes. I'd come run back to you. I'd come run back to you. But you know we can't long dreams alone. Pay the rent, I must leave you all alone. 'Cause you know I made my choice many years ago. Now this traveling life is the only one I know. But you know I love you. Yes, I love you. Whoa, I love you. But you know I love you. Yes, I love you. Whoa, you know I love you. Yes, I love you. Whoa.
it's late. I know you're weary, and I know your plans don't include me. Still here we are, both of us lonely, longing for shelter from all that we see. Why should we worry? No one will care, girl. Look at the stars now, so far away. We've got tonight. Who needs tomorrow? We've got tonight, babe. Why don't you stay?
Deep in the
dreamer.
you've got to get your things together. You just got to leave before you change your mind.
And if you knew what I was thinking, girl, I'd turn around. If you just ask me one more time.
Conversation, we ride it together. Find me. till then. Lord, you know I'm gonna need a friend till I get used to losing you. Let me keep on using you till I can make it on my own. Till I can make it on my own.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, heading for the trains. Feeling nearly faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed the diesel down just before it rained. Took us all the way to New Orleans. I took my mouth harp out of my old dirty red bandana. I was playing sad while Bobby sang the blues. With those windshield wipers slapping time and Bobby's clapping hands, we finally sang up every song that driver knew. Whoa, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing ain't worth nothing, but it's free. Whoa, feeling good was easy, Lord, when Bobby sang the blues. Was good enough for me. Bobby McGee. From the coal mines of Kentucky to the California sun, Bobby shared the secrets of my soul. Standing right beside me, Lord, through everything I've done. And every night she kept me from the cold. Then somewhere near Salinas, Lord, I let her slip away. Looking for the home I hope she'll find. I'd trade all of my tomorrows for a single yesterday. Holding Bobby's body next to mine. Whoa, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing left is all she left for me. Whoa, feeling good was easy, Lord, when Bobby sang the blues. Feeling good was good enough for me. And Bobby McGee. Whoa, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing ain't worth nothing, but it's free.
Hey guys, I'm making this on March the 9th, and the reason this next song made it is because we got a foot of snow on the ground.
Thank you. bright, and the kids are singing jingle bells around.